Hello and welcome to Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I would just like to say, you know, I'm really busy working on my critical merchandise and I've been uploading a lot of new designs. So if you guys haven't checked it out recently, the link is below and I would really love it if you would do so. I have been putting this together really because it was just a bright idea on my part to try to figure out how I could exchange with you guys even more for helping to donate to and contribute to my channel and what I'm doing here. Because as you know, I am 100% fan-funded by you guys. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So I thought I would put this thing together. So I am doing a website actually for the critical merchandise. And oh my God, is it time consuming doing that? Whoa, way more than I thought it was gonna be. So anyway, let's get on with your questions. We have some good ones, but also, if you haven't seen the new series that I've started this week on the culture of Scientology, I highly, highly recommend that you check it out. I have a new, basically it's a three-part series with Larissa Smith and her parents, Tim and Sylvia DeWall. And I basically have put together an entire family story over three parts, very detailed, very in-depth, and really shows the culture of Scientology. It's not just books and lectures that people listen to and that's all there is to Scientology and its wacky, crazy pseudoscientific beliefs. There's a lot more to it. And if you've had questions about it, which clearly you have if you're watching this show, then I recommend checking out that new series because it's I'm very proud of it. And this first part is only the beginning. You guys aren't going to believe what's coming over the next 2 weeks on that series. So let's get to your questions. Here we go. Jeff Smith, many ex-Sea Org, including yourself, have said they went with very little sleep for years. How much did you actually get per week and night? I have read that without proper sleep, the brain begins to shut down. People will hallucinate, make mistakes, go crazy, and eventually die, not including how it lowers muscle matter and exposes you to the chance of getting sick, so it amazes me more Sea Org members don't drop dead from lack of rest. The lack of sleep situation in the Sea Org came in fits and starts. It came in waves. It wasn't a consistent situation where you go in the Sea Org and suddenly you're only getting 3 hours sleep a night, every night, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's not like that. It's that I've talked in the past about how when I was in management and how being in the Sea organization, the schedule was pretty wild because there were lots and lots of emergencies being thrown at us. But it wasn't like we were always under a state of emergency or a condition of emergency. There were times when things did kind of chill for a little while. And by a little while, I mean, you know, maybe a couple weeks or something like that, right? But it's easy for this to be misinterpreted as you know, you're only getting 2 hours sleep a night or something like all the time. And of course, if that were to happen, everybody would go kind of crazy. And in fact, there was one period of time where it was like that. But first, let me just say, on a regular routine basis, I was getting, as a Sea Org member, probably an average of about 6 hours sleep a night. There were times when I got 8 hours. There were times, because in order to be sessionable, in order to go into auditing sessions in Scientology, you have to be well rested. It's a big thing in Scientology. Now you'd think, because of that, that we would all want to be sessionable all the time, so we could always go in session or potentially go in session, and so we'd always be getting 8 hours sleep a night. But no. It was only for the Sea Org members that me and other people that I knew, it was only when you had to be sessionable the next day that you would, you know, be, you know, that people would be conscientious about trying to get more sleep. The emergencies would come fast and furious, and when they came, you could get 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours sleep that night. You might be up till 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning or something, doing something. And then, you know, you get your 3 or 4 hours and you know, or 5 hours and you get up the next day and you're kind of bleary-eyed. and you go to work, and maybe that night the emergency is starting to be contained a little bit, and so then that next night you're getting like 6 hours of sleep or something, you know, or whatever. It just came and went. There were times when there was one particular period for a week when we had to man up personnel into ASHO, the American St. Hill Organization, which is one of the blue buildings on L. Ron Hubbard Way. There was this, it was being renovated, and we needed to man it up, and it's a Sea Org organization, so it had to be Sea Org members. And there was this huge, we called them evolutions. I don't know where that word comes from, but we called them evolutions, a progressive series of events in order to get something done. I guess that's what it means. I'm sort of making that up. But we had this evolution hit us where we had to man up ASHO, and we had to do it now. So this happened about the first year or two that I was in the Sea Org, and everybody in management was up 24/7 going through personnel files and records and trying to find people that could be spared or ripped off or whatever to throw into ASHO. And we had to man this thing up fully. Like, we had to throw 100 or 200 people in there. So we were scouring the base, and then we were given records of people from, you know, even higher organizations, which was unheard of. And so the sleep situation that week was pretty dire. I literally, over a period of 5 days, from a Sunday night or a Saturday or Sunday until Thursday that week, I got about 3 hours of sleep. Everybody was suffering during that evolution. There were, to the point where the CMO messengers were coming around with vitamin shots. And I mean literally, like with needles, giving people vitamin shots of B complex or something like that, that was supposed to help pump them up or something, right? It had gone that crazy. It was the first and only time that I've ever drank espresso because I was so desperate. I'm not a coffee drinker. I hate coffee. So I was one of those rare Sea Org members, didn't drink coffee, didn't smoke a lot. So I was so desperate though, after 2 days of this, that I went to the canteen and I got espresso shots and I tried mixing it with chocolate milk. Oh, awful. But it did give me a little boost. So that was a very, you know, intense 5 days where we were trying to get this thing done. And then after 5 days and everybody's just bleary-eyed and practically dead, and you know, and somehow we threw some people in there, and then it stopped, and then, you know, somebody else came down with a more rational solution to, you know, to get recruitment going, and the time frame was extended because we were given a time frame of like days. And, you know, and that's the sort of thing that would happen is these things would come down, you know, from on high with these crazy orders to get something done in an incredibly short period of time. And everybody would go and try to get it done. It wouldn't get done almost every time because the orders were so madhouse crazy, but we would try. And then seeing that it wasn't going to get done, or some other executive would change his mind, or whatever would happen. I'm not privy to it. I don't know what the hell happened. But whatever happened, the order would change. And then suddenly we were off the hook. We had more time. Things chilled, you know. And after years of this, it started to become a thing for me that I would see these crazy orders come down, and I'd just roll my eyes and go, okay, well, we're going to have to all go crazy for a few days. But then, you know, it'll probably chill out, and, you know, because we're going to get done as much as we can get done. And I sort of resolved it and justified it in my mind that this intense pressure was coming down in order to try to get us moving things forward, move the ball down the road faster, even though they knew and we all knew that these orders were crazy, right? They were just wackadoodle. And that was the only way I could sort of rationalize it in my mind as to how did I live in this crazy world. As far as the other time I was thinking about that things got really crazy on sleep for an extended period of time was actually a period of time when I was on the RPF. And when you're on the RPF, one thing you can say about being on the RPF is you get sleep, okay? You might not, at least most of the time. These kind of crazy evolution things would happen on the RPF just like they happen elsewhere in the Sea Org. But for the most part, when I was in the Sea Org on the RPF, it was 6 to 7 hours a night, which was kind of luxury because you had to go in session or had to be sessionable and ready to go in session every single day. That was the only way you were going to get off the RPF. So sleep was kind of a thing, and you were given just enough time, and you learned very quickly when you got on the RPF that when your head hit the pillow, you needed to be asleep. Like, you went to sleep. There was no laying around in bed sort of thing. Like, you learned how to do that. So it was just barely enough time to get your body rested enough to be able to go into session. But while I was on the RPF, the basics came out. And this was this new series of books that Miscavige had revised and released. And I think this was in 2006 or 7 or something. And when these books came out, there was this massive order and push to sell them all. And you guys have heard about this. And this is with the call centers and the people and the crazy discipline and that sort of thing. But for months and months, people were not getting sleep. Like, they were getting 3 to 4 hours a night. And my wife at the time had to go through this. And I heard about it after I got off the RPF. We saw and heard some bits and pieces, you know, when we were in our little sequestered area of the RPF, because we didn't interact with the rest of the Sea Org crew. When you're on the RPF, you're sequestered away. But we had heard bits and pieces, and we all looked at each other and was like, wow, like, thank God we're on the RPF. I mean, it was like that crazy. And because believe me, the RPF was the most abusive environment I have ever been in. But this basics thing was even worse for a short period of time. And when I graduated the RPF and I finished it and I got to talk to my wife again, she was telling me, I mean, there were people taking off in the middle of the night all the time. Like, they're like just mass exodus of Sea Org members taking off at blowing, you know, just leaving because they couldn't deal with the schedule and the pressure and the intense sales demand, because every single Sea Org member had to sell, right? And they were up until 4 or 5 in the morning, sometimes not even going to bed at all, just because the sales pressure was so crazy. And this was really taking a toll. I mean, there were Sea Org members who were not just taking off, but there were others. You could see the dark circles. I mean, the public were starting to talk about it, right? And the executives who were having to run this craziness themselves weren't getting sleep. They were looking like zombies. And it was just kind of this period of mass hysteria on the base. And finally, after I got off the RPF, and like shortly after I got off the RPF, after months and months of this, the orders started coming down to, you know, to kind of slack off a little bit. Not slack off, that's the wrong term to use, but the pressure let up a little bit. And people started getting a bit more sleep because the executives, like everybody, was just, this is insane, you know, what's going on, and it just couldn't be dealt with anymore, because the kind of things you're talking about were starting to happen. People were starting to get sick and develop body problems and stuff because of this long-term sleep deprivation. So that was the longest period of time that I saw or heard of anything like that, and I think I've given you a general idea of how it is in the Sea Org with that. Stephen Faring. Hello, Chris. As I go through your backlog of Q&A videos, certain questions crop up. I just listened to number 26, and I was shocked by what I heard. You said something about SO members being used to staff LA Org. Is this true? Do SO members other than network staff man up that org? Wow, I'm very surprised at that. How and when did this start? I'm not sure exactly why this happened, because it happened after I left the Sea Org. So all I can really talk to you about with this is that, yes, that happened. It happened with the LA organization. It hasn't happened with other Class 5 organizations, local city church organizations. But it happened on the base there in Los Angeles, the big blue buildings. All those buildings are now manned up with only Sea Org members. There aren't regular staff members in these organizations, or at least very, very few. I think some stayed on in LA Org, just a couple, but for the most part, it's all Sea Org. This was I don't know why this decision was made, but it was, and so this was going to solve some personnel issue or problem with the LA Orgs, you know, in terms of stabilizing the number of staff they have or something, because You know, one thing you can say about CORG members is they tend to hang around longer than your Class 5 staff members who are on 2.5 or 5-year contracts. You know, they come and go. But the CORG members, they're on billion-year contracts. They ain't going anywhere. So, you know, for whatever reason, Miscavige ordered that this be done. The staff members who were at LA Org, well, I think were given the option of either leaving staff or they were transferred to other Class 5 orgs in the LA area, like Pasadena, Valley, and I think that's where they mostly went to. And again, it was pure madness. You know, when that happened, we all went, huh? Because Class 5 orgs are supposed to be staff, you know? But this is just, this was part of a whole reorganization that got done with the PAC base. You know, new command teams came in for every single one of the Sea Org organizations. All the old school captains and their executives got the boot. And I don't know what they're doing now, some lower post, I'm sure. And, I'm sure some of them got in trouble or whatnot, and other ones, you know, moved around. But this was part of a whole reorganization. I wish I could comment more about it. I wish I knew more about it or understood why it was done. I doubt that most people in the Sea Org actually know why it was done. I'm sure there's some sort of, you know, fluffy reason given for it. But as to why it was actually done, I can't really say. Stefan Newman, have you heard or read anything of Black Dianetics or Reverse Dianetics? I saw a video of two top former members, Marty Rathbun and one more, who talked about this before and wonder what you can say about this or how is it used? Is this somehow also used by LRH or is this somehow created? Did you experience this or saw it was used? In the early 1950s, 1951 or so, Hubbard started talking about Black Dianetics, meaning a perverted or corrupted form of Dianetics. Hubbard put out the book Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health in 1950, and he started giving lectures immediately on the subject. And it might have even been as early as 1950 that he coined the term Black Dianetics, meaning that you take Dianetics techniques and you use them for nefarious, evil purposes. Now, of course, we can all, you know, sit here and conjecture about how Hubbard used it for nefarious, evil purposes, or how its very structure and organization was nefarious and evil. But what he was doing when he was talking about Black Dianetics is he was saying that you could use Dianetics techniques for purposes of overt, blatant mind control or hypnosis type techniques that you could use. You could use the technology of it to implant people with suggestions and commands, similar to what's done with hypnosis. But usually hypnosis, you know, a person goes under hypnosis knowingly and willingly. And with Black Dianetics, you'd be using Dianetics techniques, you know, or reverse Dianetics. You'd be using reverse Dianetics techniques on a person in order to make them purposefully worse, right? And without their acceptance, but without them voluntarily knowing, you know, what you were doing. I'm not really sure why it was that Hubbard talked about this or got into talking about this, but he presented it as though it was part of this, you know, sort of conspiracy theory that he started formulating about how the AMA and the APA and the FBI were working against him because he had presented the world with this technology that was capable of freeing people. And in the book Science or Survival, Hubbard talked about pain drug hypnosis and how he had uncovered through Dianetics research that this stuff called pain drug hypnosis was being done on people by the military in order to get them to forget things or get them to, you know, be involved in projects and then make them, you know, forget about anything that they had done in, you know, being involved in it. Kind of Manchurian Candidate sort of stuff. And I think the Black Dianetics was sort of a, you know, on the same vein as that. You know, whether that actually is true or not, that pain drug hypnosis exists or that the government has done it, well, you know, I don't know. I certainly can't sit here and say that that was never done. You know, when you have things like MKUltra that you know actually happened, you're kind of like, wow, anything goes. But as far as Black Dianetics goes, I don't, you know, I think Hubbard was just putting that out there for propaganda purposes to sort of, you know, give people the idea that Dianetics was more influential and more powerful than it really was, right? Because really, Dianetics is nothing more than simple regression therapy that works with some people, doesn't work with some other people, and has a limited degree of use. You know, that's how I've described that. So no, I never experienced it or saw it because it's not knowingly practiced by anybody in Dianetics or Scientology. Nobody who's you know, in those groups would knowingly use it to purposefully harm other people. That's not what Scientologists are about. You can say a lot of things about Scientologists, but they don't generally overtly do that. I'm talking about your run-of-the-mill Scientologists. So that's what I can say about that. Marta Fjord. Hello, Chris. I really like the way you think, which is admirable, not only for someone who had been living in a brainwashing cult for a long time, but also for any other ordinary human being. I wanted to ask if it is possible for someone with enough money to practice Scientology in secret, given the worthy bad press Scientology is getting the last few years. Someone like Will Smith, for example. I know you said before you don't think he is a Scientologist, just a study tech fan, and I know he is very cautious in his interviews, but his teenagers can't seem to keep a secret. They always talk about how they want to save the planet or fix the whole planet Earth, just as Scientologists say they want to clear the planet. They think they have superpowers like manipulating time, as people high in OT levels think they do, or as Tom Cruise has said also. The son also recently said he remembers being a baby. The daughter said he never reads other books except the ones from her study tech. Their parents always treated them like adults. And then there is the propaganda movie, After Earth. Do you think there are people practicing it totally in secret? Well, I know for sure that there are people who practice Scientology totally in secret. I can't say who they are because it was kept so secret that I never was privy to who those people were. But we knew that and heard rumors, and I had talked to people at Celebrity Center. We're talking about celebrities now. Either high-profile celebrities who didn't want the Scientology connection known about, or executives or business people or things like that, people who didn't want to, you know, be publicly known as Scientologists. We always thought, especially when I was in the Sea Org, that was really weird. I could never get my head around why somebody would covertly be a Scientologist. It just didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. But that was when I was in the bubble world where we thought Scientology was the greatest thing ever. An example of somebody who's a rather, or who was, and maybe still is, a rather covert Scientologist, right, pretty hidden, is Skrillex. You know, he's a musician, and his family are Scientologists, and he's very, very, very rarely commented or said anything about it. His name is Sonny Moore in real world. And he comes up in the interview I did recently with Larissa, which is how I found out that he had Scientology connections. I didn't know up until then. And so anyway, this is a known thing that there are people involved in Scientology. I always, you know, wanted to work in Celebrity Center so I could see the list and see who is, you know, involved in Scientology that I didn't know about, because, you know, because people in the Sea Org have stars in their eyes about celebrities as much as anybody else does. So I'd always hoped to see that, but I never did. That was a list I never got my hands on. So, Mr. Bazzini, your interview with Aaron Ra was outstanding. You must have him back on your Sensibly Speaking podcast. In the interview, he refers to Matthew 10 from the Bible. I Googled it and was utterly shocked by what I read. I would be very interested in your thoughts on that chapter of the Bible. All right, well, I got one of these Gideon Bibles here, and so I had not read, you know, Matthew 10, so I did so, and I won't read you the whole thing here, but just to reference what I think Mr. Bazzini is so shocked and appalled by. This is the chapter where Jesus sends forth his disciples. He names them and sends them off on their way on a mission to go out and deliver the good news about, you know, his coming and the word of the Lord and that sort of thing. And this is where he, you know, says that they're not to, you know, carry money and, you know, only have one staff and, you know, don't have shoes, have sandals, and, you know, go out and go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and preach and, you know, tell them that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And then it gets into a part here which I'm sort of, you know, this isn't really too shocking of stuff. He's just saying go out there and that people are going to have things to say against you. To the disciples, he's saying this, right? There are people who are going to, you know, talk some pretty serious shit about what you're saying, and you're going to, you know, have a hard time with some of them. But when judgment day comes, they're going to, you know, reap the whirlwind. But then it gets into this part, which is probably what you're referring to, where he says, "Think not that I come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it." So, and then there's a few more paragraphs of similar vein here. So basically these paragraphs, as far as my thoughts on it, are where Jesus lays out himself as a cult leader. saying, you know, look, my word is higher than and more important than anybody else's. And if this is going to rip up and disconnect families and mess things up, you know, so be it. Because there isn't anything more important or more powerful than what I have to say. And those are my thoughts on it. Now, is that this looks very much like destructive cult thinking. Now, there's, as I've actually talked about in my podcast, which just went up yesterday when you guys are watching this, I don't happen to think that all Christian groups are destructive cults. So, you know, let's not misinterpret what I'm saying to say that, well, because this says something that's pretty destructive cult-like, cult leader-like, that I think that all of Christianity is a destructive cult, because I don't think that. There's a whole, you know, series of things that make up what is a destructive cult, and not all Christian groups, by any stretch of the imagination, fit all of those characteristics. But were all Christian groups to actually take this literally, you know, you would have a pretty good case to be made that, you know, those groups are preaching destructive cult tactics. So those are my immediate thoughts on that, and I hope I got the right part of the chapter to what you were referring to comment on. And it's time for Flash Answers. Spike Robinson. Hey Chris, crazy question. I know that other bits of things can be added other than clay in the clay demos. So did anyone ever resort to using action figures or similar to represent people instead of making them out of the clay? Did anyone save their already made figures, such as people, cars, books, etc., to be used again to save on time? Was that allowed? And finally, what is the strangest thing you saw at the clay table? It has really surprised me how much fascination and how many questions I've gotten about this clay demonstration thing in Scientology. It's really interesting to me how fascinated people are by this. I don't know where, Spike, you got the idea that other things are used in clay demos, because it's just clay. And labels, little cardboard labels, are used and put on the clay figures to say what the clay figure is. You might make a man and then put a label on it that says Joe. Okay, good. Now that's Joe, right? But you would never use action figures or something like that. That would be against the whole theory of what a clay demonstration is, which is to, with your own hands, make the things out of clay. So anyway, so that's a key component of clay demonstrations, is that everything in them is made of clay. And yes, people did reuse figures and things from clay demos when they were making more than one at a time. You might do one clay demonstration, and then you have to do another one, and then another one. Well, you just reuse the same figures and, you know, work them around and that sort of thing, but you're still molding clay. And as far as the strangest thing I saw at the clay table, I saw a guy who decided that in order to show a married couple and show that they were a married couple, he showed them having sex. That was a little bit weird to me. That's the strangest thing I ever saw. Nick Aloya, do you think that at some point that all of the orgs will end up being solely run by the Sea Org? The reason I ask is because it would seem that there would be a minimal amount of volunteers to staff the orgs. What is your opinion? By this, I think you're asking whether Sea Org members would actually go be the staff members at all of the Churches of Scientology. And no, I don't think that's going to happen because they can always recruit, Scientologists to be staff members at their churches. And I don't know why they would, switch everything up to be Sea Org members. That would be a logistical nightmare, and it would be very, very difficult. And it would also be very costly for the Sea Org to do that. So I can't think of why they would do that. Judd Ford. Hi there, Chris. Love your stuff. Can you please tell me why you think Deepak Chopra is a fraud slash fake? As I have done a bit of his stuff, but having gotten out of Scientology, I don't want to go from one cult to another. Please, please, please stay away from Deepak Chopra and his pseudoscientific nonsense. I don't think that Deepak Chopra has a clue what the hell he's talking about. I think he uses scientific sounding words and takes concepts and words from science to lend credibility to his, spiritual bullshit. And here is how I would ask you to debunk this for yourself and not just listen to me, okay? Go actually listen to Richard Feynman or another quantum physicist actually talk about quantum physics. Then listen to what Deepak Chopra says about quantum physics and quantum this and quantum that. Compare those two things, and you're going to find a vast gulf of difference between how they talk about it and what they feel their level of understanding of that subject is. Deepak Chopra he's just a total fake. And he has managed to wrangle in way too many people who send money his way and buy his stupid books to support him because they don't themselves have any idea what quantum physics actually is and what its limitations are, which are many, and what the limits of our knowledge of, on it are, which are many. And he just dabbles in this with these words and gets gullible people to listen to him and send him money. So that's my take on him. I can't recommend highly enough to just get away from the guy and get out of that cult because that is cult jumping from Scientology to Deepak Chopra. Definitely, that is going from one cult to another. Okay, and so we've come to the end of another episode of our Critical Q&A. Thank you very much for listening to some of my nonsense here and staying with me. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, leave it in the comment section. I'm wide open to hear anything you have to say, good, bad, or indifferent. And also, check out my critical merchandise site. And also, I will throw out here again, if you guys don't know or haven't heard, I have a book about Scientology. It's on Amazon. It's called Scientology A to Xenu. Check it out. I'll see you guys next week.